Staticus, welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Nice to have you here.
Hey, Knut. Awesome to be here. I think it's the first time for me.
Yeah, it's the first time. I mean, we've had Douglas on before. He also works for Bitbox, or he invented the thing, right?
Definitely. He's the original inventor, as we call him.
I think most of our listeners are unaware of who you are. So please give us your story and how you got Orange Pilled and how you ended up working for Bitbox and all of that.
Yeah, happy to give a quick TLDR. I'm an IT engineer by trade. Been working before it like international consulting, but at some point realized my hobby, Bitcoin, is taking over more and more of my life. I got radicalized in the block size wars when I also started running full nodes. My claim to fame is to have written the first, or at least the most well-known guide, how to run a full node on a Raspberry Pi. Back in the days, the raspbybolt.guide. It's not a software you can download, but it's really just a guide where the journey is part of the process. And it needs to hurt a little bit, but you learn a lot about Linux on the way. So this is when I became a bit more well-known in the Bitcoin community. And then I had the chance to start building a Bitbox base full node project at Bitbox. I'm now a co-founder of Bitbox. And unfortunately, the Bitbox base project, I think we met back in the days, maybe in Munich, Lightning Hack days or something like that. That was ages ago. That unfortunately didn't make it. But now I'm just like taking care of basically everything that nobody takes care of at Bitbox, going on podcast, explaining self-custody and doing a lot of operations and stuff like that in product management, or checking that nothing falls through the cracks.
Yeah, this is wonderful because there are so many parallels and similarities here. I mean, my first viral article was one about how to control your private keys back during the block size wars as well. So just before the Bitcoin cash fork happened, everyone was telling me, and by everyone, I basically mean Andreas Antonopoulos, because he was the only one talking about Bitcoin back then. Maybe not the only one, but he was pushing for people to take control over the keys so they could sell whatever fork they thought was not going to be the real deal in the future, going into the future. And to me, it was obvious that that was the Bitcoin Cash fork and I needed to sell that. And so I wrote an article about how to control your own private keys. But it was not about running a full node yet. So I guess your article was probably more technical than mine. But that was the first one that sort of caught some attention. So it was a special thing for me. That's why I kept on writing. It got like 70,000 reads or something. It was big for me back then. So, and also my conviction, you say you were radicalized during the block size wars. And I would say I was, my conviction that Bitcoin was the solution to all of this crap going on was cemented during the block size wars. That's how I saw it, when I saw that the users actually were in charge and not the big money players.
Definitely. I can relate to that. Like running my own node and being part of UASF and all that stuff, like figuring out how HD wallets actually work by splitting off the different chains and immediately selling the Bitcoin Cash stuff and then Bitcoin Diamond and then Bitcoin Gold and then whatever I could sell to get more free Bitcoin. That was like how I first really learned how to manage HD keys. That was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, same here. And I remember having to tell my wife to leave me alone. This day, you cannot interrupt me today. I'm sorry, I need to do a thing. I cannot explain why. I cannot explain what I'm doing even, but I need to do this. And I'm very happy that I did. Yeah, it was, in hindsight, I view that fork as a cross between a train crash and a Christmas present.
True. I mean, 10% free Bitcoin, but also quite scary at the time.
Yeah.
And reading like years after the block size wars, the book is also made me more aware how deeply rooted in history this like almost civil war actually was, which I didn't realize back then in the full extent.
No, and I mean, this is how Bitcoin is censorship resistant and all the other beautiful stuff. It's by us actually caring about it and seeing a threat for when it happens.
Exactly. So,
speaking of that, I'm very curious about your stance here in the core versus not wars, of course, and like how you view that whole situation.
I mean, I'm more of a pragmatist in that way. I don't like JPEGs.
No, I really don't. I think no one does, but except the scammers.
But I also feel like doing like, it's almost a bit like a cargo cult. Stuff like pretending that if we just put in some filters, which are all we already know are super easy to circumvent, just to, I don't know, maybe almost a bit virtue signal that we care more than others. I know these are loaded terms and I don't want to get personal, but for me, it's just not worth the whole shebang. I agree that whatever core is, I mean, it's not one thing, right? It's just a collection of deeply convicted individuals that are doing great work. They are not paid by us. It's like rough consensus and all that stuff. But communication was probably not optimal. But I guess that's also part of open source development, that you don't have a PR department, that you don't have like an official spokesperson. So overall, I'm not too worried about the whole situation. I think it's more like posturing online. And so the running knots, however, whatever you think about Luke Dash Jr., which is in some sort of a really cool guy, but also kind of a bit of a crazy guy, having like a project maintained by one person is definitely not the solution to all our worries. Let's leave it at that.
I view him as a very beautiful representation of the saying that the line between a genius and a madman is very thin.
No. It's also always like the embodiment of the thing that I still don't understand, how like Bitcoin and religion can really work. Also quite a loaded topic, I guess, but for me, like, don't trust, verify somehow doesn't quite extend into the religious realm, but maybe we don't want to go there.
Oh, this is an area where I enjoyed going a lot more like 5 years back. I've somewhat changed my stance on that. Like I also, like you, think that it, don't trust, verify, it's very applicable to everything else in life too. And I would prefer if people weren't as flock mentality minded as they seem to be. But then again, I nowadays view like statism as the worst religion, sort of, or of at least a really bad one. So the danger like with throwing Christianity out with the bathwater, I think that can be that it's replaced by something even worse, because most people just don't verify. They trust and they don't think for themselves. So yeah, that's sort of where my stance is now. And yeah. I also find it fascinating that I can agree with a guy who is so deeply convicted about a religion, which is based on don't verify, trust. And I have so many similar opinions, or I agree with the morals of that guy a lot, often.
Yeah.
So I find those dynamics, if you may call them that, to be quite interesting. And also how Bitcoiners, I mean, there are, in terms of religiosity, there's the entire spectrum in Bitcoin. And I find that fascinating, like how we can end up at the same conclusions, but from such different angles.
I mean, obviously my point is not that I like want everybody else to abandon whatever they believe. It's just that I can't really wrap my head around it. But in the end, it's a free world and everybody should follow their convictions, and that there's a non-aggression principle and live and let live, right? So it's not me like telling others what they should believe or should not do. So yeah, no. I think it's also a representation of all the people that are in Bitcoin. It's great that there's like a huge variety of different beliefs, different people, because Bitcoin is for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important that it's not instrumentalized by a certain subgroup, but really is open and whatever the community, which is not really a thing one sees, somehow reflects that.
Yeah. Would you say that Bitcoin is for everyone or for anyone?
Yeah, no, I always stumble across these or upon these two terms, and I'm not a native speaker, so I really don't know the difference. But I remember that NVK once corrected me online. It's probably anyone, but I really don't know the difference.
I think the nuance is in everyone. Like, you have to have some technical skills to even be able to do Bitcoin. Otherwise, you're doing paper Bitcoin. I think that's what they're alluding to. So
yeah, maybe. I mean, my personal prediction for Bitcoin is that hopefully it's successful, and in 5 or 10 years, most people will use Bitcoin, but they might not use the technical Bitcoin because the complexity will and I think needs to be abstracted eventually, and hopefully in a way that preserves the unique properties of Bitcoin. But in layer 2, layer 3, whatever, I hope that we can preserve all these freedom aspects of Bitcoin. But could also be that Bitcoin over the years becomes more of the Linux of monies, where like everybody's using it, every web server is running it, every Android phone is running it, but people really don't know that they're using Linux.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we have something that is easy to use while still preserving whatever we deeply care about in Bitcoin, and not just some sort of ETF or instrumentalized or state-controlled absurdity based on Bitcoin.
No, I absolutely agree. I think custodial lightning, I mean, it is very possible to do fractional reserve banking on custodial lightning, but it's still orders of magnitude better than the current banking system, because you can't do it to such an absurd extent as you can with fiat money. You can basically just print out of thin air forever.
Definitely.
All right. So yeah, let's get into the Bitbox. Like, can you tell me a bit about the history of the technology there and where you are now, the new Nova and everything? I don't know. Should we start with like how this thing happened? I mean, Douglas sort of told the story already, how he invented it in a basement, basically.
True.
And tinkered around. What's been your experience over the years?
Yeah, I mean, Bitbox, the first Bitbox basically came out 10 years ago, 2015. So that's in Bitcoin or dog years, that's ages. So it's been around a very long time, invented by Douglas and Jonas Schnelli back in the days, then slowly growing as an engineering first company, which might not be as optimal from a marketing perspective and then like a market extension perspective. But they did really well during the first bull market and had a lot of innovative ideas, everything open source, still using a secure chip, all that stuff. But I think the real kick came with the Bitbox 02, which was launched in 2019. Was already like 6 years ago, so also quite proven, which is good in security terms. You don't want the newest shiny thing if it holds all your money, but something that is battle-tested and has been reviewed over and over again. And yeah, although the hardware itself, the Bitbox 02, is 6 years old, there's still like every few months, there's feature updates, I think we're really at the forefront of Bitcoin technology. It's the only hardware that I'm aware of that supports sending to silent payments, for example, or Taproot was like very early adopted. All the little thing, miniscript, Liana support, very, very good multisig support. When we actually did implement multisig a bit later than other brands on the market, but by analyzing how they did it and basically making sure that we're interoperable, we found so much stuff that we basically made responsible disclosures to everyone. I hope it's everyone, not anyone, which again is a good thing, right? We should keep each other accountable, do the responsible stuff, do responsible disclosures. And the Bitbox really, I think, is still one of the best hardware wallets for multisig as well, because it's not stateless. It actually stores all the configuration on the device. And so the old hardware, I mean, long story short, the old hardware, which is still going strong, gets updated like basically every few months. So that's a really good thing. You never had to buy another device if you bought it 6 years ago and you still have the latest version today. And now with leading a bit to the new hardware, the Bitbox O2 Nova, which we just launched a few months back. The story there basically is that, of course, we updated everything we could in software, and everybody who had a Bitbox got all the new features, but there's some stuff that you need new hardware for. And the main driver was iPhone support. We were really super happy when iPhone switched to USB-C. Immediately plugged in the Bitbox O2 and yeah, it lit up. It got power, but that's about it. Because it just can't communicate over USB because Apple is so restrictive. It needs to whitelist the device. We would need to have an Apple chip in the Bitbox or pay outrageous sums of money just for them to do a little checkbox. And in that regard, we said, okay, maybe it's time to do an evolution of the hardware, and basically updated the whole platform, not to replace the Bitbox O2. We develop and sell both in parallel, but the Bitbox O2, the one you know and have been using for a long time, is still going strong for all the platforms like Windows, macOS, Linux, and Android, phones or tablets, but not iOS. So no iPad or iPhone. And the Bitbox O2 Nova is now the newest hardware. I have one here, which you can see now also has a new shiny glass display, just like little stuff that is more aesthetic, but we wanted to do for a long time. Because, of course, we listen to our users, and when the display like scratches because it's covered behind plastic, it's not that nice. So we now have two options for whatever our users value most. If they need iPhone support, then it definitely should be the Nova, and everything else is more a bit like aesthetic.
Yeah, where are they manufactured, these things?
Yeah, I mean, we're proudly Swiss-made. So we do manufacture in Switzerland, which is, I think, quite crucial for security hardware. Switzerland has a very strong manufacturing base still. I heard that, for example, in the US, it's much harder to actually manufacture technology from the ground up without having dependencies to abroad. But Switzerland is very strong also in machining and all the electronic stuff. So for us, we it's absolutely no problem to manufacture everything in Switzerland. Of course, we buy the chips are not made in Switzerland, but it's more about the whole device architecture, the security architecture that is fully open, and the firmware, which is also 100% open source. So the individual chips don't really matter that much, because you can control and verify how the device itself works and how it communicates and all that stuff. That's very important for us.
Yeah, nice. Are all such chips manufactured in China, or how does that work?
Not really. I mean, I think it's a bit hard to find out where they're actually manufactured, but at least the manufacturers, the Bitbox O2 uses an Atmel chip, which is, I think, in a US company. They might manufacture maybe in Taiwan or something like that. The Bitbox O2 Nova now has a certified secure chip, which is made by Infineon, which is a German company. But it's also, again, hard to get the information where they actually manufacture. Although I know they do have like chip factories in Germany, Dresden, for example.
Hello there, children. Have you ever thought about a $5 wrench attack or $15 wrench attack? What if someone were to hit you on the head and try to take your Bitcoin with this? Bitcoin transactions are irreversible, and if someone else gets access to your private keys, your money is gone. BitVault is the first Bitcoin wallet that protects you from both physical and digital attacks. It upgrades security with multi-sig and time lock, which is a very interesting feature of Bitcoin. This means that transactions are locked for 2 hours to 15 days, giving you enough time to intervene and revert the transaction so the money goes back to you, even though the attacker thinks they got access to the money. So head to bitvault.sv to secure your lifetime subscription now. There are only 42 of those available for $199. Time is running out.
And was the BitBox the first hardware wallet, like, or what was actually the first one? Then Trezor or Ledger, or was MVK up there? He was quite early too, like with the cold cards.
I think development on the BitBox and Trezor probably started around the same time, 2014-ish, something like that. Although I was not around back then, so I might be wrong. I think Trezor beat us to the market by a few months in 2015. The BitBox was probably the second hardware wallet available. Ledger definitely came later. But it's important to also state that the hardware wallets back then were not the hardware wallets you expect today, because the concept simply didn't exist. And most of them didn't have a screen, for example. Not even the first Ledger one. I think it was the HW.1 or something. They had like all devices had some weird mechanics to verify what you're actually doing. The BitBox had a 2FA app that you had to pair first. And that was also the one of the main reasons because for us to build the BitBox O2. Because today you just expect a screen to verify what you're actually signing, what address you are using for receiving. And yeah, it's just state of the art. So this is probably the biggest reason to go with the BitBox O2 and then discontinue the BitBox O1.
Yeah, it's a competitive market in a very brutal but beautiful way, because the less secure ones, they do go off market pretty quickly. Like, you don't want a bad security practices reputation as a hardware wallet manufacturer.
I mean, that would be ideal. I do think there might be some exceptions where we try to communicate, for example, for example, these little card wallets are getting more and more traction. And they do have probably their reason for existing, but I think they are marketed quite dishonestly as hardware wallets because they don't have a screen. You basically fully rely on the host device. Some even show your recovery words on the mobile phone, which, I mean, it's just like a total no-go if you're expecting a cold wallet. And marketing such devices, which are not cheap. I mean, 50 or 100 euros for something that is probably like $1 or $2 to make is kind of strange, but they keep not disappearing, unfortunately.
Well, aren't there, like, it's sort of like shitcoin. It goes in cycles. People get fooled all over and over again, but different branding every time is necessary.
Yeah, maybe.
Something like that.
I guess the entry to market is also not as high. We have a huge list of like future hardware wallets projects. I think we're at 150 or almost 200 entries now. And I would say like 90% never even make it to the market. So building secure hardware at scale and then actually deliver it and ship like worldwide is not as easy as it sounds. If you're only used to shipping software, having something tangible and make it go through customs and supporting customers with like real world hardware problems is really not the easiest thing to do.
No. What about the, like, Bitbox uses a different kind of backup than most other hardware wallets, right? Because you don't get the immediately get the seed phrase, you get an SD card, right?
So for us, we very quickly learned when we worked with future users or beginners that, like, writing down the recovery words is quite scary in the beginning. For us, it might be not so obvious, or even like we might tend to brush this away. But I still remember when I first wrote down my first 24 words, I didn't understand what these actually were. It took me ages because you want to make sure that every single character is legible. So you can easily spend like 15, 20 minutes just writing down these words, verifying them. Then you, worst case, you need to like enter them again with some clumsy buttons or anything like that. So we decided that we want to make it easier for users. And the first backup you do with the Bitbox is store your backup to the micro SD card, which is also included. And of course, the micro SD card slot is on the device. So obviously you're not sending it through the host computer. And that allows you to basically set up the Bitbox in 2 or 3 minutes, no problem. Of course, you still have the option to write down the recovery words later. You can also skip the micro SD card if you don't want to use it. But for most beginners, and this is definitely our target market we're building towards to, I think it's a huge relief to have like an immediate backup and then learn a bit more. There's a reminder in the Bitbox app. I think after you receive about 1,000 euros or something, that we then recommend, okay, did you, maybe it's time to do an additional backup. Here's like a step-by-step guide to write down your recovery words, or just do a second micro SD card backup. And in this way, I think it's just, the user journey is just a lot simpler. And it's also quite nice if we want to set up the Bitbox with a friend, because you never see the recovery words. Otherwise, you would need to leave the room while your friend like writes down the words for 10 minutes and verifies them without you. So this is really easy.
Yeah, those 12 magic words are truly magic.
They
people,
are.
People don't understand how magic they are. The very fact that money is now just information. It's. I remember so many moments in Bitcoin where that insight was the mind fuck. Mm-hmm. So for instance, the first time I printed paper wallets and you know, you scan the address and then put it in an envelope, and then I sent Bitcoin into the envelope, and I realized at that moment, like, holy shit, I could send money into the bank vault. Mm-hmm. And if I'm in the bank vault, I can send them out from the bank. Like, this is amazing. Like, this is something completely different than anything that existed before it. And to me, that was a great moment. And just words are words. You can do a lot of things with them. And it just takes imagination. You can write a song, you can write a book and hide any amount of money in it without anyone ever knowing. Like, it's
definitely
it's so powerful.
It's a super powerful concept, and like the imagination to go like across borders with just a few words in your head, that's like really powerful. But it's also something that we're not used to, and it's really, if you give the like the future of money a try, and the first thing that a wallet asks you to write down words by hand is kind of a strange experience, let's put it that way.
Yeah, if you haven't experienced it before or like know what it is, then it is truly strange.
Definitely. But of course, it's non-negotiable that this is always needs to be an option. Because of course, people want to write it down by hand. It's the most simple way. And it's also like you're free to then do with the words whatever you want. You can like split them or have copies of it or put them in steel or whatever. That's really important. But it's probably not the first like step you want to do if you're just getting started with Bitcoin.
Yeah, no. I'm curious as to those steel plates and metal solutions for keeping your words. There are so many companies that make those. I think at one point there were 70 yeah. different companies competing in making these steel plates to engrave words into. And I'm not at all sure if those things will even exist like 20 years from now or 100 years from now. I just don't know. I think that's, that, I mean, engraving them means that they will last forever. And there's a, that's an attack vector. Like that's an added risk as much as this, as it reduces risk. Oh, what are your thoughts on that? Like, do you think they will still exist in the future?
I hope so. I mean, that's what they're built to do. And it really depends what your circumstances are. Unfortunately, I myself still don't have like the one answer that fits everyone, how to store their backup. I think this is the next big frontier that we need to work on in Bitcoin to make it easier, more resilient, but also a bit more universal, because at the moment you have these words and you cannot, of course you cannot delegate them away, but it's also quite dangerous just to keep them around at home or whatever. But if you want to make sure that your backup survives a fire or flooding or whatever, like steel is definitely the way to go. And someone once asked me, well, I now have steel plate, like the Bitbox steel wallet, but how do I destroy it?
Mm-hmm.
And the steel plates are the ones that you punch in, like in the matrix. We also have the different option that you can just take out the little tiles and put them back in to update it. But with the punching, I think the safest way is just to punch more. So basically to punch every field and then you know, okay, now the information is basically, it's overload. You just don't know what was the original information anymore. But it's really hard to like destroy it.
Yeah. No, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all just keeping a secret from everyone else. So even if it's the location of your Bitbox and your PIN code, that is also your Bitcoin in a sense, because if you have that, you can move the sats.
Yes.
And if you have the 12 words, you can move the sats. Mm-hmm. If you have the steel plate, you can read the words and then move the sats. So like it's, but in order to have the steel plate, you will need to know where it is. So that's the secret you keep from everyone else. So it's all about secret keeping. And I've thought so much about this, and I've written a lot about it too, is what that actually means is that the Bitcoins are literally in your head. All of them. Like all of Bitcoin's own. The only reason that you say that you own them or that you can interact with them as if you own them is because this secret allows you to do that. But you don't actually own them. You just know information.
Mm-hmm.
That's what information money means. It's not about owning anything. It's just about knowing something and also knowing that the probability that someone else knows the same thing as you is so infinitesimally low that you can act as if they didn't.
Yeah.
And thereby own them. And I find that aspect to be so deeply philosophical, because mm-hmm. if they're in our heads, they are us. We are the Bitcoins. Like we are all Satoshis, not Satoshi. We are the actual Satoshis.
Okay.
Do you ever think about these things and go loud, like deep down these more spiritual, if you will?
I might be a bit more
pragmatic.
I don't know.
You like said pragmatic.
Practically minded.
Yeah.
I find it very interesting, but I'm definitely not a Bitcoin philosopher. For me, having the backup or the recovery words or the Satoshis directly accessible is just like, it's important that the backup is transparent. So if you try to encrypt it, then you just need to make a backup of your passphrase or whatever. So it's just like more and more and more obscurity until like nobody can reverse engineer it if you get hit by a bus. So there's definitely a trade-off. But a backup could also be a second hardware wallet. Like having a second BitBox with the key, with the keys in it that is password protected is actually a pretty good backup. Or of course you can always go multisig, and then you can add, I like the recommendation of Pamela Morgan, I think, when she did like to her Bitcoin inheritance, so that you make each part of the backup less sensitive, be it now Shamir secret sharing or poor man's Shamir secret or even a full multisig, but have them in like access controlled areas. Can be at work, can be, but it could also be a bank safety deposit box, but where someone else like kind of monitors who can access them. So you cannot be forced to get to that backup on by gunpoint. So these are so many little nuances that you make yourself basically jump through hoops to get to the information again.
Yeah. That's not bad at all. But as you say, there's no one size fits all solution here. It's very personal. And depends on what kind of situation you are in life. Maybe you don't have a job or a bank safety deposit box available to you.
Locks can be something that could play in a lot here. Also to force you to wait some time.
That leads into our latest sponsor is another Swiss company called BitVault that have a very cool time lock function thing. Are you aware of them?
We talked, we know each other, but no deep integration or anything.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll see going into the future. There's another thing I really enjoy about, which I think is related to this, that we are our Satoshi's thought, is that we as Bitcoiners, we are all incentivized to help one another out with any project. Bitcoin companies are... Sure, there's market competition between you guys and Trezor and Coldcard, but also you are at the same time incentivized to help one another because that helps Bitcoin and that helps number go up and we all get richer and happier and more influential. So I view it as like free market competition on steroids because it has the competitiveness, but it also has this collaborative aspect to it. We're really part of the same entity, which is another deeply philosophical thing, but I find it highly fascinating.
And I think that works between like competitors, because of course we want to make, for us it's non-negotiable that we support industry standards, and for example a BitBox wallet always needs to be able to be restored on a Trezor or something like that, because in the end it's your money, right? We try to avoid any vendor lock-in or stuff like that, so that's something that is just like obvious to us. The responsible disclosures, or just like having open source code that others can read and get inspired by, some even copy it, but that's a different story. It's allowed and it's good. So like building self-custody, I think, is the overarching goal for us. Maybe priority one is further Bitcoin. But what is Bitcoin? Like further self-custody. Then, of course, we want to make sure that BitBox is still around in 5 or 10 years, because that's also good for our customers. So we need to be kind of successful as a company and make enough money to pay wages. But the overarching goal is always like, work on Bitcoin. And even if you go into the companies, I come from like very corporate environments, PwC, for example, or it's Accenture I've been working on. It's insane if you look into a Bitcoin company like BitBox, how nobody needs extra motivation. Like everybody is on a very fundamental level aligned and intrinsically motivated to put in their best, just because they want to be helpful to Bitcoin. And I think that's also very unique in the Bitcoin space. That luxury is probably non-existent for most other commercial like entities or fields of work. It might be true for some like academia or more like ideologically, maybe NGOs, stuff like that. But work in a profit-driven, like in a good way, environment where everybody like has a higher purpose, Yeah. I think that's super powerful.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I detect it with other Bitcoiners all the time. And you can even use it as like a sort of filter to filter out the shitcoiners at the conference, because they don't have that. Like, they don't see that. But it's truly beautiful when you see it.
Yeah, I mean, going back to my own personal story, I was working at PwC and I had the chance to join their blockchain team. But I decided to go with Bitbox, which basically meant like a 50% pay cut. But of course, a blockchain team goes where the money is, like auditing Tezos or all that stuff that was just not interesting for me. I wanted to like keep building in Bitcoin. And because there's no, like, Bitcoin doesn't have a treasury, Bitcoin doesn't have a foundation that it has like huge pre-mine. So there's just no money to be made directly as a service company pondering directly to Bitcoin. So you need to build for Bitcoiners.
But yeah,
it's much more, like I say, involved, but also much more rewarding.
Absolutely. And it's not only hardware, it's like anything you do in it, not even hardware or software. I mean, writing my books for Bitcoiners is more rewarding than writing them for a normal audience, I'd say. And I'd say I Definitely. Get much more in return for it. So no, it's all good.
Gloves up. We know of a knockout Bitcoin wallet. It's the Bitbox O2 Nova Edition, and you can get it at bitbox.swiss. This little thingy has the latest security chip, and you can plug it straight into your iPhone, and it's an overall awesome device. The software interface is super smooth, and it's a very secure hardware wallet. They're one of the oldest hardware wallets in the business. So go to bitbox.swiss/infinity and check out the new Nova Edition of the Bitbox right now. Code Infinity gets you a discount. And if you go to bitbox.swiss/infinity, you will automatically get that discount. So there. $15 wrench attacks are one thing, but what if you die? You need some inheritance planning. We have some very wonderful Aussie friends that can take care of that for you. They're called the Bitcoin Advisor. You find them at the Bitcoin Advisor with an ER, not an OR at the end, .com. And they can secure your Bitcoins for generations for a very low fee. So go to bitcoinadvisor.com and check out their inheritance planning stuff right now.
What have we left out of this conversation?
I mean, my colleagues will not be happy if I don't show the Nova at least once
more.
So I really like what we did, and you can see it's white, which different colors might be a little thing, but we wanted to have that for a while. It was not possible with the Bitbox O2 because the plastic needs to be translucent, and it only looks good with black, to be honest.
Oh.
Like we had like orange Bitboxes and stuff, but look closely, you can see it, like the tape and everything. It just doesn't look good.
No, or at least not.
It's not reproducible, the quality for production. So, who knows? I'm also the 3D printing guy of the company, so maybe we'll do some prototyping with fun colors and stuff like that. And there are some other neat little additions that are not obvious. Like just now, like it has more storage. It has quite a interesting like communication protocol that we use to like not to avoid Apple as the new middleman, stuff like that. But I guess that's either from a user's perspective, either you want like the more premium build quality and iPhone support, otherwise just get a Bitbox or two. It's basically feature wise, it's as of today, it's the same. And we plan to release updates for both in parallel. It's basically the same code base.
And you should use code Infinity for 10% off.
Oh, good one.
Or whatever. Nice. Is it 10%? I can't remember, but try it anyway.
Very good.
All right. And you guys were in Helsinki representing Bitbox.
Yep.
Or some of
I
you.
Heard that was pretty cool.
It was a super cool conference. You will be present in Lugano as well, I guess?
I think so, yeah. I'm not sure in what capacity, a speaker or just around or on the Italian stage. I don't know yet. We're We have quite a large Italian presence now, which is very interesting. It's a hugely growing market. So also a lot of engineers and other colleagues are working out of Italy, which is cool powerhouse.
Yeah, I find Switzerland to be so interesting in terms of a Bitcoin country, because each and every canton is so different. And the same with the Bitcoin companies. I mean, you're based in Zurich, right? And that is very different from Lugano, which is is Italy. It's basically Italy, but it functions because it's in Switzerland. And Zurich is basically a part of Germany almost, it's very Swiss. I shouldn't say that, but it's German speaking.
Exactly.
And very
although
different.
Germans don't really understand Swiss German, so we have our little secret language.
That's good to have.
And in the middle between Lugano and Zurich, I would say Zurich is very Bitcoin focused. Lugano as well, together with Tether and some more more researchy things. And in the middle you have Zug, which is very tax optimized, and this is why all the foundation, Tezos, Ethereum, they're all incorporated in Zug. So it's quite different, just Zug and Zurich, although it's 30 minutes by train.
So Zug is the shitcoin capital of Switzerland, is it? Would you say that's correct?
I would just say that I don't say anything about it.
Maybe you use another term. No, but I just love the train ride down when I fly to Zurich and take the train down to Lugano. Switzerland is surreal. It's like you're in a fairy tale or something. It's just so beautiful, and I can't wait to go back.
Yeah, if the weather is nice, there are a lot of wow moments when you go along the lakes and go across the Alps. It's really nice. And I'm from the middle of the Alps. So when you drive from Zurich to Lugano, you basically go through Canton Uri, where I grew up, which is right before the Gotthard Tunnel starts.
Oh, yeah.
But in the middle of the mountains. So this is something I only started appreciating once I did not live there anymore.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just the sun sets so early, and if the clouds are coming, it's the pot is closed and all that stuff. But it's really nice. And today I really enjoy going back home and go hiking. This is also why we started naming all the Bitbox updates after mountain huts, stuff like that. Just a little bit of Swissness.
Yeah. Are you going to any other conferences? Lugano is one, but are you going to any other conferences this year or the upcoming year?
Not quite sure yet, to be honest. So this year we made a huge push towards traditional finance, especially in the German-speaking region. And I did a lot of these conferences because German, although we're a company in German-speaking Switzerland, or company language is English. We have a very diverse set of nationalities, and having people that represent the company and maybe also go on stage in German is really a huge bottleneck for us. So I did a lot of these, and I after the first 4 or 5 months, I really had my share. So
yeah.
But I'll ramp it up again eventually, but not sure how fast.
All right. Yeah. Luke and I are going to Lugano anyway, and we're looking forward to that one a lot. And before that, we'll be going to Bulgaria. So that's also a very interesting Bitcoin scene over there. Germany, I mean, that's one of the most interesting Bitcoin scenes in all of Europe, I'd say. It's very, very big.
Yeah. And for me, I really watched basically from the sideline from Switzerland how the Bitcoin scene in Germany really exploded. It was amazing to see, because when I started there was basically no content in German. Then came all the 21 meetups in very organized form. Then Fab the Fox, shout out, started with a friend of his, the Aprico Media, and started translating all the good Bitcoin books into German. And I think that helps a lot in Germany. Switzerland is a bit more international. People are more accustomed to reading stuff in English, and most movies in the cinemas are also in English. But in Germany, everything is with subtitles.
Yeah.
So, or even dubbed.
Dubbed,
so
yeah. Yeah,
having
exactly.
the content being available in German, I think, is a real big deal. And that led to a huge explosion. Also with notes that you can see now where they are located. Germany is a real powerhouse in Bitcoin today.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes me think of a quite recent theory I've had about how Bitcoin adoption, what it looks like. Because if you take the English language all over Europe, 20 years ago, English speaking skills were way lower in like Germany and France and anywhere else in Europe, basically, that didn't have English as their first language. And nowadays, like all the kids who grew up on the internet, they speak perfect English. So it's been a gradual, but very gradual and sudden at the same time, in a way, because all of a sudden everyone speaks English because it's the language of the internet. And I think Bitcoin is similar. Sooner or later, everyone speaks Bitcoin because it's the money of it's the language of money on the internet. So, and I do suspect that that's what it looks like. That's what adoption looks like. What do you think of the theory?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to it. Just having like Bitcoin present helps. But I think it probably also needs a little bit of a catalyst or solve a pain point. And I think in countries or cultures where like the trust in the state is less, it's probably easier to get Bitcoin adoption, like Turkey with over 100% inflation. I think it's very logical that the biggest sponsor of the international airport is BTC Turk, in Istanbul, because it's really something that people like can use immediately. Sometimes in Switzerland, although we are quite international and open and engineering minded, and do have some sort of the same principles, I would say, as Bitcoin. Very like all the governance is very decentralized.
Yeah.
Also the monetary budget, we don't pay to the federal state and then get money back. We basically pay to the village, then to the canton and to the federal separately. They all have their own budget. They all have their own representatives, and they're only working for the people that actually like elected them. And we have a final say of everything. So a user-activated soft fork, if you want, we can always get a referendum and like shoot something down if we don't like it. So that's kind of a decentralized thing, just to make sure that the state is not like too powerful. But still, like Bitcoin, do you actually need it in everyday life today in Switzerland? Because the Swiss franc is probably one of the better shit coins, I would say, worldwide.
It's the last one to leave the gold standard, as far as I know.
But it's a safe haven currency. Inflation is pretty low. I mean, we have like 0.5% mortgage rates, stuff like that. It's insane.
But it has decoupled from gold, though. Like I think that was back in the 90s that it decoupled. Which is later than every other fiat currency, but still, it's a fiat shitcoin. It will go to zero someday, like it's inevitable. Even if it takes 100 years.
To be honest, I could also like imagine the opposite, because like the US dollar is going down the drain, the euro might be next, and Swiss francs is really a safe haven currency that our central bank tries desperately to make it cheaper, to lose value, because for like Switzerland is an exporting nation. We have a huge like precise machining industry and all that stuff. So if the Swiss franc doubles, it's really painful for us, for all the revenue that we want to sell stuff into, like the rest of the world.
This is fiat economics at its finest. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
We have to destroy the currency to be able to export.
So in the end, we might even like slash some zeros. I don't know. Yeah.
But in comparison to Bitcoin, though, like if you, as soon as you throw Bitcoin into that bucket into that conversation, it's completely different. Everything
but
goes
I think Bitcoin might not, at least today, might not be quite a fair comparison because, of course, it's like an emerging money.
Yeah.
Like the awareness is still growing. So people are discovering it and adoption and demand is growing a lot. And that drives the price, of course. So maybe for now, like measuring fiat in gold, which is not like prone to these hype cycles and FOMO buys and all that stuff, might be better long-term, like a view at least.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, I mean, like gold basically doubled also in Swiss francs, like the last few years. So
yeah, gold has been doing really well lately. Really,
definitely.
Really well. As it should. When they print.
Definitely. I don't think there's another way out because nobody will declare bankruptcy and tell us the truth.
No.
They'll
print their way out of everything. That's the only tool in the toolbox if you want to keep spending.
Yeah, and you need to keep spending.
Yeah.
I mean, of course you could try to spend less, but you still spend more. And you cannot tax everybody out of existence.
No.
Because that also, like, it would be disastrous for the economy.
And so it would be very impopular.
Printing money is the only thing.
Yeah. It's impopular. So you have to hide the tax, which
exactly.
is why you print. So
definitely.
Do you believe that, this is a conversation I had with a lot of people, do you believe that fiat currencies and Bitcoin can ultimately coexist? If you like extrapolate the thought vector as far into the future as you can they even coexist, or will it have to be one or the other?
I guess this comes back into the Bitcoin philosophy part.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's the only thing I can.
That's all right. I don't think I have the answer, but I could very well imagine both scenarios. Depends on how successful or how like universally usable Bitcoin will become. If we can really use Bitcoin for everything, then I think, yeah, sure. I mean, what's it going to stop? But maybe it will always be slightly more convenient just to have local currencies that are pegged to Bitcoin in some sort of shape or form. Or Bitcoin is just for long-term saving and for daily spending, you still have like your Swiss franc or whatever. I don't know. But if you're like radical thinking into the future, it's kind of inevitable for Bitcoin to eat everything else. But I'm still like, it's kind of radical. I'm not comfortable with the radical predictions.
Better to shrink your time horizon a bit and focus on the problems at hand.
There's so much, so many unknowns still.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's not easy to just like have some assumptions and then extrapolate like 50 years into the future.
No, it is hard. I find it fascinating though to do that every now and then because it's so weird. Just imagining what a deflationary economy looks like. It's like nothing humanity has ever experienced before. It's just completely different.
And for me, the one thought that it's not only about not having inflation, but that all the productivity gains that we have every year with new technology, which makes everything by default cheaper, but then the consumer price index staying at the same, or of course going up, basically the state or whoever like has power of money, basically claiming all the productivity gains and some on top, basically as a free tax. That's crazy.
It is crazy, especially when you think about how they ought all to be going down. All prices ought to be going down all the time. And if you measure from Bitcoin, they do.
Yes.
And it's the only way to see it. Otherwise, we've never seen it before because we've always lived in these inflationary currencies, including gold, which is also inflationary. It's such a mindfuck because you realize how much they steal. It's enormous amounts, especially now, like productivity gains. Like, imagine building something, whatever it is, like now in comparison to just 30 years ago when you didn't have mobile phones and now you have AI and AIs and drones and stuff. Like, it's just not comparable. Like, just to set up a meeting with someone would have taken half the day back in the 80s. Like, it's like, oh no, I tried to call him. He wasn't there. I guess I'll have to wait.
Definitely. Yeah. And that was very, very long under the assumption that, yeah, of course, like inflation is theft, and but it's not that bad because it's at least in Switzerland, it's maybe a 1 or 1.5%. So it's kind of, you kind of can at least calculate it. But once you realize that that's only the cherry on top,
yeah,
they basically take all the productivity gains and then add the inflation on top.
Yeah.
That for me was the real like aha moment where I said, oh shit.
Same here. It's like, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Definitely. Imagine what we could build.
Yeah. And imagine how much better everything would have been if we were all able to really keep the fruits of our labor, which we can.
Yeah. And I mean, I really like also like the writings of Ray Dalio and like how countries go broke and like the all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it really feels to me that like a lot of countries are in the fifth stage of the downturn cycle.
Yeah.
Like basically the rise of populism, like all the infighting, all the external fighting.
Yeah.
And if you go down to the root, it's so much is just rooted in bad money.
Yeah.
In the debt fueled economy that is just not sustainable. Imagine we had like a fair and better money for the people that is not political. I think that's almost, it feels to me, it's like almost too much to wish for, but at some, and in some days and in the other days, I think, well, we actually have it.
Exactly.
We actually need to make it like universal.
As you say, some days you can't really believe it because fiat is everywhere and Bitcoin is still super small. There's your other local Bitcoin is like the other weirdo in town, and there's so few of us. Like, but on the other hand, it's like, holy shit, this actually is here. It works. It does all the things it promises. It is hope in so many ways. I choose to live as if Bitcoin exists, I'd say. Yeah,
Bitcoin definitely is hope.
Yep. All right. Anywhere on the internet you want to send our listeners? Like, where can they find out more? Where can they find the article, by the way, the Raspi Blitz article? Is that still around?
Raspi Blitz is the project that was built on top of my guide. So
all right.
my project is the Raspi Bolt.
Oh, the Raspi Bolt, yeah.
Raspibolt.org. It has its own website. It's now a community-maintained GitHub project.
Yep.
So I'm not that involved anymore, but if anyone wants to feel like do their hands dirty and actually doing their own full node and not just downloading an image, that's definitely something to check out. On Twitter, I'm Staticus3000. Order has been taken, unfortunately. And of course, for everything Bitbox is bitbox.swiss, where you can find like all the information about our products, but also so much more. Like our blog is like every 2 weeks we have really good content, not quite as philosophical musings, but still going a little bit into that direction. Great people writing explainers and like stuff that is easy to digest, but still insightful.
Yeah, great to hear. Yeah, so make sure you go to bitbox.swiss and check out both the articles and, of course, the products, and use code Infinity and all of that. So, yeah, Staticus, it's been great talking to you. Say hi to Yoko and Douglas and everyone else in the office.
Will do.
And this has been the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Thanks for listening. Brush your teeth, subscribe, like, comment, do all this. You know the drill. Bye.